Welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you're doing for the community. That's for sure. And folks, I got to tell you, we're always excited to have you with us. This program is sponsored in part by the Laborers Local 373 and the Operating Engineers Local 66, both of the Pittsburgh area. Joining us today, we've got Hedrick Smith. He is a Pulitzer Prize author and general all-around reporter, producer, and author. Hedrick, welcome back.
And running the website Reclaim the American Dream, which talks about economic and political reforms. So
absolutely.
And
Hedrick, I got to tell you, I love the section that you talk about gerrymandering, but that's another story. Donald Trump is supposed to be working for Americans, especially blue-collar people. He keeps talking about buy American, hire American. What's going on? He just signed some legislation that is going to allow...
No, not legislation. He doesn't sign legislation. He signs executive orders.
True. I stand corrected.
The reason is he hasn't passed any legislation. You got to get it through Congress first before you can sign it. He's been doing a lot of signing executive orders. In fact, he flew about a week ago up to Wisconsin, and he went out to the Snap-on Tool Company in Kenosha to promote his Buy American, Hire American mantra, and to sign an executive order that said it was going to tighten protections of workers under the H-1B visa program, which we can get into in a minute. But what struck me about it was one of the signs that greeted Trump when he got up there that shows some frustration among his political base. And the sign said, held high aloft by one worker, "Wall Street got theirs. Where's my infrastructure job?" And the point is that this is a politician, Donald Trump, a rebel who preached anti-establishment, blue-collar populism, and got the workers and rural people behind him in a kind of a mutiny against the establishment. And then he proceeds to pack his cabinet with billionaires, mm-hmm. to invite CEOs to the White House to tell them what their pet peeve government regulations are for elimination. And he's just floated a tax plan that offers an unbelievable bonanza for the super rich, and particularly for himself. And the question is, as asked in the sign, what has he done for blue-collar workers? What has he done for the working class? What has he done for the political base that put him in office and enabled him to upset Hillary Clinton? And, the Trump people will point to a bunch of executive orders, but when you look at the fine print of his executive orders, they don't do much. Most of them call for studies, which will lead to action maybe later on. He can point to, of course, the jawboning he did with the people at Carrier Air Conditioning out of Indianapolis, and some jawboning he did with the auto manufacturers, actually during the period before he took office, but after his election. And in one instance, he probably saved 700 or 800 jobs, and another instance, he probably saved somewhere between 800 and 1,000 jobs, and that's good, and he deserves credit for that. But that's a drop in the bucket compared to the 6 million jobs that got lost to foreign trade that he said he was going to do something about, and not much has happened. He said on day one he was going to label China a currency manipulator to try to correct the imbalance of trade and the loss of jobs to China. We're almost at day 100, and he hasn't done that yet, and he's pretty well said he's not going to do that. He's changed his mind. So you want to get to something concrete like this H-1B program to see what it's going to do. I don't know how familiar you are with it, Charles, but it was set up back in 1990. And the idea was that high-tech companies like Microsoft and Intel and the Silicon Valley boys said they could not get enough STEM graduates, scientific, technician, engineering, mathematics, people in their business. So they needed highly trained, college-educated foreigners to fill out these slots, and they pointed to some of the foreigners who've helped set up Google and Intel and some of the other high-tech companies and said, immigrants really have helped us on that score. But the idea was you couldn't replace American workers with foreigners, and you couldn't hire foreigners if there were Americans available Right. But that's what's happened.
And the games that they play with that whole system there, Hedrick, you know, they say we need a PhD with 30 years of experience that knows how to do this, that, the other thing, has done research in this. And then they say, and we're willing to pay you $22,500 a year. Now, obviously, they can't get people here in the United States to apply for those jobs. So what they do is they go to the Department of Labor and they complain and they say, you know what? We can't get Americans to fill out these jobs, so we need to go overseas and hire these people. And then they run a newspaper ad in the New Delhi newspaper, and they get all the applicants they could ever want. They bring them here to the United States. They put them in company housing. They pay them in company script if they can get away with it. They tell them that if you leave the company, you owe us for all of our immigration bills and all of the wages that we have paid you so far. And there's a whole game to that one there.
There's no question about it. It's been used. It's been used very badly for a long time. In my book, Who Stole the American Dream? It came out a little while ago. I go through chapter after chapter at Pfizer and at some of the banks and financial companies in New York. Yeah, they do say they need PhDs, but the truth of the matter is they're really hiring people, many of them, that just have BA and BS degrees.
Right.
They're not highly skilled specialists. They are folks that work for anywhere from 10% to 60% of American salaries. And there have been bipartisan bills in Congress supported by both Democrats and Republicans, authored by Dick Durbin, the Democratic senator from Illinois, and
right.
Charles Grassley, Republican from Iowa. So this is not a partisan issue. And they've said, you know, we've got to, number one, we've got to raise the floor of what can be paid to foreigners. And you mm-hmm. determine that by, you know, what the job skills are and what they are, what the local skill levels are and the local pay levels are, and match them up. You know, we've got, they now run this thing on a lottery. The three biggest companies that get these visas, and there are 85,000 visas a year, they're good for 3 years. You can renew them, so they're good for 6 years overall. So six times 85 means that there are now over 500,000, over half a million foreigners now
right.
working in good-paying jobs. It would be very good paying for Americans, anywhere from like $60,000 to $125,000. So these are good jobs, and they're working. Half a million foreigners are working on them, and they're Americans who literally were forced by their employers, banks, Disney World, by the way, did this with a whole bunch of the technicians and the people who run the Disney World technology, make all the computer stuff and all the games, all that stuff work down in Disney World down in Orlando. They made their folks train the foreigners to replace them. So question, mm-hmm. were there Americans available? Yeah, there were Americans in the jobs. And the Americans were fired. And if the Americans complained and refused to train the foreigners that were going to succeed them, they were denied severance pay. So they've got these people to shut up and not talk about it by making them sign a secrecy agreement and giving them severance pay and then firing them and getting them out of their jobs. I mean, it's an outrage. It's been going on now good 20, 25 years. There hasn't been, you know, it takes law enforcement. It takes going and checking on employers, forcing them to describe the situation, and then checking on whether or not there were Americans available at the time when they hired the foreigners and whether or not they're paying the prevailing wage scales or salary scales. That all takes enforcement. The last labor secretary who was doing a good job of enforcing that was Bob Reich when he was the labor secretary under Clinton back in about 95, 96, 97. He was doing it. Since then, Republicans have been in the Congress have been cutting the budget for the Labor Department, and Trump has suggested cutting it now another 15-18%. You're not going to have the people around to enforce these things. He says
right.
he's going to step up enforcement, and he's right. He should be doing that. The words he's using are good. The problem is the actions are not following the words.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, Hedrick, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about how we can change this and other issues that we need to work on. How's that?
Good.
Fantastic. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
A new in-depth look at access to programs for youngsters as part of Minnesota's new Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System finds that children of color, Native Americans, And lower-income children are more likely than their wealthier white peers to be enrolled in at least one of four early childhood programs in the state. Stephanie Hogenson, Research and Policy Director at the Children's Defense Fund Minnesota, says the Child Care Assistance Program drives access to early childhood programs, but nearly 90% of the kids who are income eligible aren't participating because of a lack of state funding.
Our legislature is currently debating some proposals to increase funding to the program as well as improve the program to make it more family-friendly and more accessible for families as well as easier to use for providers.
Governor Mark Dayton has said he wants to use part of the state's $1.65 billion budget surplus to fund preschool programs in the state, but Republicans released their own plan to eliminate it, close an arts school, and remove multiple automatic budget increases for school programs. Dayton has called it appalling for lawmakers to use four-year-olds as bargaining chips in budget negotiations. Hogenson says focus and outreach needs to be placed on getting children of color, Native Americans, and those from lower-income families into early education programs. Nationally, 3- and 4-year-old Asian children are enrolled in school, including public and private early education programs, at a higher rate than their peers. However, of all the states, Minnesota has the lowest rate.
And Minnesota is a large immigrant population, and we have to pay attention to specific needs of immigrants to make sure outreach is targeted and transportation and language and literacy and other barriers are addressed.
Hogenson stresses the need for increased access to early childhood programs, saying it's one of the most effective ways to improve student achievement, close gaps between racial and socioeconomic groups, and create positive education results. For Minnesota News Connection, I'm Veronica Carter.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your hanging out with us, so that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters and the United Steelworkers, and we appreciate their support. Joining us today, we've got Hedrick Smith. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner. Former New York Times reporter, Emmy Award-winning documentary producer for PBS and PBS Frontline, and also responsible for ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org. Hedrick, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Charles.
Hedrick, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. We appreciate it. You know, we come to the understanding that the system is rigged against working folks here in the U.S. for any number of different reasons. One of the reasons why companies like getting these H-1Bs is they can put them under these onerous contracts and just basically take advantage of them, and they have very, very little recourse to protect themselves.
Yeah.
And they do it for wages, like you said, that are anywhere from 60% below what an American would expect to be paid. And at the same time, it's making it more and more difficult for kids here in the United States, Carnegie Mellon University, to go to school.
You just talk about your sponsors, the professional engineers. I mean, some of the people who are being hired now, you're probably talking more civil engineers and aircraft engineers and that kind of stuff. But engineers are among the people that are being hired, by Tata Consulting, which is an Indian firm, by WirePro, by Infosys. Those are three Indian offshoring firms, and they provide computer programmers, engineers, systems analysts, back office, cost accountants, people like that for banks, for insurance companies, as well as for Silicon Valley and all kinds of high-tech companies all across the country. They're the three biggest users of this. And what happens is American companies, whether it's Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, or Disney World, or Microsoft, or a bank in Bank of America, whatever, J.P. Morgan Chase, use these firms to hire Indians who get paid at Indian salary rates, and then the Indian firm contracts with the American company that needs 50 engineers, needs 100 systems analysts, needs 150 people in the back office, whatever. They sign a contract with the Indian firm, and they say, oh, no, we're not the ones who hired the foreigners. We just have a contract with a subcontractor. I mean, that's how American companies are getting around the provision of the law that says they can't hire a foreigner if an American is a qualified American is available for the job. And there are big arguments about whether or not there are shortages. As you can imagine, the business lobbies and business groups say there are enormous shortages, but there have been studies by RAND, the independent research hub in Southern California, people at the University of California system at UC Davis, and other places that say, no, they're not shortages. They're only shortages because you aren't prepared to pay
right.
the salary level that will attract them. Yes, there's a shortage. If you want to hire an engineer for $25,000, an engineer's not going to take that job. So you can say there's a shortage of engineers at $25,000. If the going wage for that engineer is 70, or salary is $75,000, $80,000, there's no shortage when you get up to that salary. So there's, as you said earlier, there are all kinds of games being played with this system, and it is costing, you know, at the moment, at least half a million good jobs for Americans. Half a million would bring the unemployment rate down another half a percentage point, and it would put a lot of people in much better shape.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. My question to you, Senator Hedrick, what is it we have to do to make this happen? Do we need to lobby Congress? Do we need to jump up and down in front of the president? What?
No, I would say the most important thing, and it's interesting, you're in Pennsylvania, so you've got 13 Republican members of Congress, and you've got five Democrats. You got a state legislature which is dominated by Republicans. The most important thing is face-to-face contact between people who have an issue that they feel as though the government is not treating them well on, to go to the meetings that members of Congress have when they come home. There's a lot of tendency today in America to do a tweet. Trump does tweets, but he's president, so he gets a lot of publicity for him. But to do a tweet or to sign on a petition on the Internet, my experience, and I've been in Washington reporting for a long time, decades, politicians don't pay much attention to that, particularly when the wording of these things is pretty much the same. They say, they call it astroturf. It's not real grassroots opinion they're getting. It's something that's been artificially generated by a lobbyist on either side. I mean, there are lobbyists on both sides who use astroturf. So what really matters is grassroots lobbying. What matters is going to when the congressman comes home and says, wait a second, president promised us jobs, promised us he would do infrastructure, promised us he would bring things back to America. He hasn't been to Pennsylvania since he got elected, and we're one of the three swing states that helped him carry this election. Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin were the three that put him over the top at the very end, if you recall. How come the president hasn't been here? How come he hasn't been to Scranton or Erie or York or Lancaster or wherever and told us what the heck he's doing specifically for us, for our companies, for our jobs here in Pennsylvania? We want that. This is what got promised. When you saw what got rolled out yesterday at the White House, Charles, this was not a tax plan. This was a tax dream, and it was
right.
a dream for the wealthy. They
right.
got rid of the estate tax for the wealthy. They got rid of the alternative minimum tax for the wealthy, which is a catch-all tax in case they have so many deductions they get away from paying no taxes. So this was a kind of like the goalie in the hockey game. I'm not going to let you get through the goal. Okay, they want to eliminate that. They want to drop the top tax rate down without closing any of the loopholes that the wealthy are using. And one of the things they're going to do is they plan to do is to take away the deduction that people would get for paying the state tax. In other words, people who pay a state tax in Pennsylvania or Ohio or New Jersey in the listing area that you're in, they get to deduct that amount from their income when they file their federal income tax. The Trump thing, the Trump proposal idea, I hate to call it a plan, I mean, because there was so little detail in it. It's just pie in the sky kind of stuff to attract Wall Street and the wealthy to support him to try to get something moving and to make it look as though he's done something. I mean, this is a mirage, but it was a mirage totally directed towards the top 1%. There was almost nothing in it at all
right.
for Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah.
Sixpack, an average American.
Yeah, you know, I thought that, you know, going from 35% for corporate tax down to, 15%, 20% drop. But, you know, working stiffs like myself and my family were, you know, they're dropping at 3%. Really? Yeah.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there's very, very, very little at all. I don't know if they're dropping it 3%. They might be helping a little bit on the standard deduction. But the problem was there was no way you could tell. The one thing you could, the stuff you could really tell about that was really clear, it was for corporations and for the top 1% of income earners in this country. It's very hard to tell what there is there, and there really isn't much there at all. But the disappointing thing to me, and I think for the people who voted for him, who were blue-collar, who were average Americans who thought, well, this guy is going to go against the corporations. This guy is going to do something about the trade deals. This guy is going to do something about infrastructure. I mean, he said a bunch of things that need to be said, and it was interesting. It was unusual for a Republican to be saying them. He was more pro-worker. He was more friendly in his rhetoric, to workers than Hillary Clinton was in many ways. But the proof is in the pudding. What is he doing? And we're only 100 days in, but still, he's put down markers for the wealthy. He's put down markers for corporations. He should put down some markers. He should have put down some markers for the working class that put him in office. And I'm sitting here writing something on this right now for whostoletheamericandream.org and for reclaimtheamericandream.org. So I'll have it up there in a day or so. As he approaches 100 days to kind of summarize this. And we're going to keep track. I mean, the game's not over, and Trump is still saying some things that sound good. The difficulty is, as the guy said, I love that sign. I like to go
Hedrick,
back to that
Hedrick,
sign.
We are up against the time very quickly. Your website one more time.
ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org.
Fantastic.
Minimum wage, better capitalism. Election reform, gerrymander fix, all that kind of stuff.
There we go. We appreciate that, and we'll talk to you again soon. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Laborers Talk Radio.